Well, every month, we take you to class. Grand Valley's College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, doing good things under the umbrella, under the leadership of founding dean, Dr. Frederick J. Anzac. Thanks to my guests in studio, they talk about how they are educating, paying their dues forward, and obviously what's happening in the research world as well. My next guest to do just that, Dr. Cynthia Thompson, assistant professor in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. Good morning to you, Dr. Thompson.
Oh, thank you. Great to be here.
Yes. How long have you been with Grand Valley?
Just 3 years.
Okay.
3 years.
All right. Here we are. We're going to talk a little bit about your journey and your research that does aim to understand the social, ecological, and physiological factors driving primate behavior. So, Cynthia, from where do you hail?
Well, I'm originally from California, did my undergrad out there, moved to Ohio for graduate school, Kent State University, and ended up here after that.
Yay! So let's take this step at a time. First of all, your BA is in evolutionary anthropology.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. Yet mostly focusing on primate behavior.
Wow. Were you always interested in the primates as a little girl?
I wasn't actually, no. I really thought I wanted to be an archaeologist when I grew up, and obviously that didn't work out, but you know, love of biology turned into an interest in social behavior, and primates are the social mammals, so that's where I ended up going.
And yes, Kent State in the specialization of anthropology, and boy, you just continued the biological anthropology for your PhD as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. What does it involve to do a postdoctoral fellow?
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, and they vary a whole lot, but for me, it was a combination of teaching and research. So I was at a small medical school in Ohio. I was teaching human anatomy, mostly with cadavers, so dead bodies, to medical students there. And my research there really transitioned from what I was doing with my dissertation, which was territoriality and social behavior, into a lot of different aspects of, you know, functional morphology, as well as thermoregulation in these animals.
And what brought you to Grand Valley?
Well, I was looking for, obviously, a job. I wanted to become faculty somewhere, and Grand Valley is just a really great mix where you get to interact with students, but also can still get research done, too. So it's a great place to be.
That's great. Well, let's talk about how you spend your days at Grand Valley with the students. What courses do you teach?
I teach mostly anatomy labs dealing with cadavers. So we have introductory level labs, upper level labs where the students are actually dissecting the bodies themselves, as well as our graduate courses for our health sciences. So specifically for me, I do the physician's assistant's anatomy course.
This is my former life in physical therapy. I did a lot of cadaver work,
okay,
undergrad and grad, so I know what it's like. That day one when you're like, you want me to do what with this body? And thank goodness we have those donated to research. But your specialization also has to do with the primates. So let's talk about the research side of you, Dr. Mm-hmm. Thompson.
Sure. So, you know, a lot of the research I do tries to integrate what we know about primates physiologically in the lab. And, you know, this is a really controlled setting where you can collect a lot of detailed, intricate information. However, it's not natural. You know, these animals are, you know, usually confined. They aren't in a natural thermal environment or a natural social environment. So I also do a lot of field work that tries to look at how they're doing these things in that natural context in the forest. And we can't gather as much physiological data there, but we still get a better idea of actually what their natural condition is.
Is a monkey a monkey a monkey?
No. So actually, there are quite different types of monkeys, and a lot of what we think of as monkeys are actually apes or things like prosimians, like lemurs are one that are not monkeys that most people think are.
So, well, let's zone in on a little bit of the work that you've done that maybe translates into the work that you present to your students. You've done, well, first of all, you're interested in how the spatial and temporal distribution of food influences the competitive, what, regimes in which primates live?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, these primates, you know, have both competitive axes, two competitive axes that they spin on. They have to compete with their group members inside their group, and they have to compete with those other groups, in which case maybe banding together with your group mates might be a better way to gain access to resources. So I'm really interested in one particular monkey, the marmoset monkey, which uses renewable food resources. So this is a, you know, a tree that produces exudates, in this case, kind of like tree sap. And it's stable. It's always there. They can come back to it and back to it. A lot different than something like fruit, which a lot of monkeys eat, which is ripe for a certain amount of time, but then goes out of phase and they have to go somewhere else for that next bit of food.
And results of your research translate into what?
So a lot of it, you know, just basically increases our understanding of primate behavior, you know, and this is a big group of us, but obviously humans are a part of it. So there's a lot of analogs that you can make between what these animals are doing in the wild and what we do in our wild, quote unquote, setting.
What findings have you come up with?
So one of the things that I've been looking at pretty extensively lately is thermoregulation in howler monkeys. And these guys, the ones that I study, are endemic to Costa Rica. This is a tropical environment. It's very warm. It's hot. It gets up to 120 or so sometimes in the dry season. And we're actually seeing that these guys show evidence of getting cold, that you have physiological and behavioral adaptations to deal with these cool temperatures, which is not at all what you would expect from a tropical monkey. So they're really facing thermal stress from both ends, these warm environments as well as the cold.
And which monkey is this? Is this this is
the howler monkey.
The howler monkey. And the how about the wild marmoset monkey in Brazil?
Mm-hmm. So those are the ones that I talked about doing the renewable resources. Right. So they come back to these stable gouge trees. They actually gnaw out the bark with their teeth. That stimulates a response in the tree. It thinks it's a wound, and it tries to fill it, much like a scab. And they come back, and they parasitize that exudate, eat it as food, and keep coming back. They scent mark on that as well, which is a whole other interesting conundrum of what they're trying to communicate with those cues.
You, you're also interested in the spiries and the use of the smell of olfaction to communicate?
Exactly. So, you know, these scents can change in composition. So we know the chemical components of the scent marks these animals lay down can indicate things like their individual identity, female reproductive status. And it's very apparent that they are using these cues to communicate with. And I'm really interested in how that might translate to feeding behavior. Not all gouge trees are created equal. Are they depositing certain chemical cues on some and not others in order to say, this is a good tree, I really should come back and eat it, or maybe this is a really bad tree, I should avoid it next time.
Dr. Cynthia Thompson with us, sharing a bit of her research life with us as she gives back to the students in the form of instruction here at Grand Valley State University, our class segment for you. You've done extensive work, and obviously this is all on your bio mm-hmm. from the Grand Valley website. White-faced sake monkey?
Yeah, so white-faced sake monkey are white-faced, as the name says, but only the males. So they're actually sexually dichromatic. The females are very a drab brown color, very camouflaged and blend in. These are the species I did for my dissertation. They are a really unique mix in their social behavior. We usually have primates that are quintessential monogamous, one male, one female, and offspring. We then have monkey groups that are large grouped and usually polygamous, so many males, many females mating together. These guys have this variable monogamy that we see. Sometimes they're incorporating these extra group members, an extra male, an extra female. Sometimes they're not. So there's really a lot of analogs with human behavior where we are monogamous. We have clear adaptations to monogamy, but a lot of variation in with that too. So these guys serve as a great model to investigate those issues of how that comes about. How does this social system evolve?
So I trust your research does involve some travel.
Absolutely.
Tell us about where you head next.
Absolutely. Well, I just actually got back from Suriname. I did an educational workshop for university students down there in building conservation leadership skills, which is an absolutely rewarding experience to work with those students down there that really are, you know, on the forefront of making a difference in conservation.
Grand Valley students?
No, they are all Anton de Combe in Suriname.
Wow. Yeah. In where?
Suriname, which is a country in northern South America. It's between Guyana and French Guyana.
Yeah, that's way out of my comfort zone, but a good thing. I guess my next question is, how do you bring back your research to the classroom?
Mm-hmm. So I actually teach a senior capstone course for biomedical sciences, and the slant that I do is evolutionary medicine. So looking at how this perspective that I study, evolution of these animals that are so closely related to us, can give insights into how we're treating the diseases that all of us face, and certainly that in my department, the biomedical sciences students are very interested in addressing. So I try and bring that perspective, which is new, I think, for a lot of the students that I deal with, into their interest of medicine moving forward, hopefully with their careers, which will go help do something about it.
And do realize the importance you serve. Nadia is a role model of yours, our buddy Jane that hangs out with the monkeys.
Just won the Lifetime Achievement Award, actually, from the International Primatological Society. So definitely an early pioneer in our field. And I have to say, it's really great to be in a field where there has been consistent female leadership for a long time. And I think it's really, really great to see that and be a part of that.
And we're a lot like this primate species. There's no getting around that. I don't want to go into the debate between the evolution, but, we've got the similarities.
Yeah, there's absolutely a lot to learn, and learning from them can certainly give insights into our own behaviors.
And obviously, I'm sure with our closing comments, Dr. Thompson, anything we can do to encourage young girls to study the sciences, to follow their passions, do it.
Well, so, absolutely for me, I think what was integral was just getting out in nature, going to parks, going to zoos, really being exposed to biology was a big part of what got me involved in it. And I think that initial just knowing it's out there can make a big difference, even if it isn't diving into a big STEM field as a high schooler or earlier.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Get you back to work, Dr. Cindy Thompson. How do we find out more about what you do?
Well, you can visit the GVSU website, get my contact info, and I'm certainly happy to talk with anybody who's interested.
Thanks a lot for your education to us, understanding the social, ecological, and physiological factor driving primate behavior and more. Dr. Cynthia Thompson in the class segment of our Grand Valley State University. Take care.